Hello. How's everyone doing? This is another episode of Camilo's Radio Hour, Wednesdays at 10 o'clock. An hour show where I'm on radio. And I hope you guys are having a good week. You're having a good evening right now. Things are starting to come to an end. Being a first year, this is the end of my first semester here at Laurier. And I feel like it went pretty well. So I had a really good experience with it. I'm looking forward to doing another, 7 semesters, technically, right, of the undergrad, and we'll get better at everything that I'm doing right now, because there's plenty of room to improve. Yes, I mean, you know, people will tell you that. There's good reason to believe there's room for improvement. That's not to say, like, I'm not happy with my results, my marks and stuff. Because after all, I had a pretty good semester. I enjoyed it. I recognize, though, that getting from like where I'm at with my writing, with my discipline, with my participation, going from where I'm at to that of a pro, that's going to take time. And that's going to take, I got to commit to this stuff. And only if I do that, only if I persevere and I put in effort, and I try to do well, and I try to develop these skills, will I get them? So that's what I'm looking forward to, kind of building a life. So that's my take on it. The actual circumstances, how things are looking for these next couple weeks can be, it's both good and bad. I didn't get such a difficult semester, I think, in comparison to what I hear. Only three of my classes have exams, and I don't have finals for most of the classes I have exam. I don't have like a final project, so it's just one or the other, and that's made it at least possible and easier to organize and to survive. I do have 3 exams, and there is one in particular I'm surprised. I'm overwhelmed by it, frankly. This is not what I expected out of an exam at all. And I've spoken to people about it, and they're also like, this, the general opinion or take on this, the general position on this exam is like, that's kind of outrageous. Like, I don't know how you're going to do that. I don't know why your professor thought that was a good idea and how literally everybody in this class is going to do well in that. Maybe like a few people, you know, that like the pros, maybe they'll do good in this exam, but for the average student, we're not prepared to do this. And I find that position to be very, it's true. I think that the effort that's going to take to do well in this exam is significant. I mean, that's the point of the exam, right? To really push us and make sure we really understood everything that was taught in class. So it's not like he's violating any rules, or it's not like this is somehow a bad exam. I mean, it accomplishes the point of examinations, really well. I mean, This is a very thorough exam. So that's why it's like it's hard to say that it's unfair for him to do, and it's kind of hard to argue against it because I mean, an exam is supposed to test how much you paid attention. I mean, it's supposed to test if you understood what was taught in class, and this is accomplishing that. However, it's very thorough, and it asks a lot. So the exam is essay based. It is an in-person exam, and we have a few hours to write a couple of essays. So now you get the idea that it's not just one essay. And the thing about that is that we're going to get the questions about the essay beforehand. So we're going to have the essay prepared and everything. But the questions are just about the most complicated questions that you could possibly ask a student. They are long run-on sentences. Well, you know, I mean, not grammatically speaking. I mean, there's nothing wrong with how this sentence was put together. I mean, it's still English. I mean, that's by English standards, it's a fine sentence. But, you know, when one question is like, it kind of takes the shape of a paragraph almost. So, you know, it's like a few lines. Then you're kind of like, wow, that's a tough question. I mean, is that even fair to ask those kinds of questions? Because it's such a large question that if you just asked me that, like in person, I could not answer. I mean, it's hard to remember because it's so long. Like once you finish like reciting it, it's like I already forgot the first, second, third parts of the sentence. I remember the last part, the last question. So it's not a very practical question. But I mean, it's for an essay, right? I mean, essay questions, I mean, you know, in the span of an essay, yeah, you could probably answer a difficult question. So, okay, but here's the problem. Like I said, so each question is outrageously long. And it's not a friendly question. So answering one of these things is incredibly difficult, I think. I mean, it requires a lot of work. And to answer four of these, I mean, that's a thorough job. That is really looking deeply into the course material. That will get me to reread my notes, probably read the textbook from front to back, back to front, inside out. I will just recite the textbook by the time I finished answering these four questions. So there's definitely reason for why, I mean, this would be a good examination if the purpose is to make us devoted entirely to this one class and put all of our efforts of waking hours and probably sleeping hours, sacrifice some of those to fully grasp the question, first of all, understanding what the question says and then answering it to the best of our abilities. That is going to be a test. And I mean, it certainly does accomplish that. So there's no question about the effectiveness and the depth of the question, if that was ever into consideration. It was if that was ever, you know, if anyone ever doubted that. However, I mean, this is one class. So, I mean, my other classes aren't doing an examination like that. And Frank, and then I don't know if they're even allowed to do an examination like that. I mean, seriously, isn't there some kind of rule about like how difficult an exam can be? Because, I mean, I have to write 4 essays beforehand and then somehow rewrite them, because it's an in-person exam, so it's not just like handing in an essay that I wrote on my own time. I have to do that first, and then I have to show up to the exam date and pretty much write it out. I mean, given the time and given the complexity of the questions, it's like, I mean, I have to have all my ideas kind of mapped out already, I think, if I want to answer, you know, these 4 questions, you know, to the best of my ability. So that's the test. I mean, is that even reasonable to ask someone to do? I mean, can I actually answer 4 questions to the best of my ability in the span of the test, in the span of that we have to write this test? Am I even capable of doing that? I mean, as a first-year student, that is. And I would even argue as a first-year student, as I would say probably any student, any level of student. I mean, is that reasonable to ask? I don't know. I don't know if how this compares really to other exams from other years. It could be that this is just the beginning. It could be that this is like the bare minimum to get, you know, to survive university is to be able to do exams like this. And if that's the case, then, I mean, life, it just got a whole lot harder. And I have to kind of take a step back from thinking that I'm kind of figuring this stuff out and be a bit humbled by the experience of having a job in this working society. So, if that's the case, I mean, okay, that's fine. You can give us this kind of exam, and it'll prepare us for the other years, and it'll prepare us for life. So, I mean, I can't blame you. I would argue that, I mean, from what I know, and from what I've heard from people, and from the people that I've told them about this exam, they all kind of get, you know, it all raises some eyebrows. It's as if this type of thing isn't so typical. So I think that this exam is kind of pushing the limits of what to expect out of an exam. What counts as a good exam? I mean, if this professor thinks that this is a good exam, then, I mean, surely he would say that, I mean, every course should have an exam like this one. If this is what it takes to prove to him that we learned something from this course, then every class should also incorporate an exam that is just like this. 4 essay-based questions with extremely complicated questions to begin with that take like about an hour to read through and fully understand. And then And then obviously write them all out, have the essay prepared, and then bring it to, you know, kind of have it like memorized in some sort of way so that you go on the day with the exam and you just kind of go. You don't have to think, you just kind of go, because it's, you know, it's a timed thing. So if that's the best way to make sure that the students learn something from this class, then every class should be like that. And so then I should have 4 essays per course to write as an exam. And if you have a standard five course semester, and you have an exam for each semester, so that would be 4 essays per course times 5, 20 essays, each of them being 5 paragraphs, so in total 100 paragraphs. And since these are finals, well, we basically are only told about them, you know, in November, and they're due in December, and so that would leave us 1 month, approximately, generously, that is, of time to prepare for these exams. And I would ask, is that reasonable? Is it reasonable to expect students to write 100 paragraphs, memorize them, and rewrite them in the span of a month? And rewrite them, you know, on one day, you know, in the span of a month. Is that enough work? Is that the expected amounts of work? Is that too little? I'd have a hard time arguing for that one. I would say that it sounds like a lot to me. It sounds like a lot. If every course was like this one, that would be too much. So what? So why does he think that it's acceptable to do this in the first place? What sets this course apart from the rest? What makes the exams on this course, thorough, extremely more thorough, and heavier to work with? What is it? That would be my argument. So, I'm. Other than that, I mean, I know some. I mean, that's my thoughts on that. So, I hope you guys are having. I hope your exams things are going well, and that you're not stuck with some kind of insane schedule that is going to be impossible to meet. But if you are, and everything, just, I mean, do your best and take some time to relax as well. It's always good to have some recovery. So here's something to kind of get you, you know, to kind of loosen you up. This is a good song. This is one of my favorites. I like to listen to this every now and then. It's just a classic. I guess that's why they call it the blues, by Elton John. Elton John. I think back when he still had his good voice. Back when he was... Well, it's not like he's not active anymore. Elton John, but the classic Elton John. I used to be a big fan of him. I had a phase And I know a lot of his songs. And they're good. They're good. I think his style, I think it's like genre, it's like pop. I think it's like a pop rock type of genre. It was early 70s. Or I think it was like more late 70s. But anyhow, one of the things on my mind this week was, getting a job. Well, it was income. Well, it was sustainability. That's one of the things that sometimes I put aside. It's easy to put aside because, I mean, I'm so overwhelmed with, I think, with schoolwork, with going to class, with getting organized, having all the time to do that stuff, that getting a job, it's like, I mean, how am I even going to fit that into my busy schedule? So it's been pretty easy to delay. However, it's not so easy now. And it's good that I'm thinking about this now because it's not, we're not at the desperate hour yet. There's still funds. There's still a way to get through. But if I don't do anything about it, then comes next year, or comes the summer, and what am I going to do? How am I going to keep living where I'm living? How am I going to afford food? How am I going to pay for next year? I mean, that stuff got to figure itself out. And I mean, I got to get onto that. I got to, because summer, I mean, summer's the time to make money, I guess. But summer's not, I mean, 4 months. This is the problem I had last year, is that the place I was working at, they told me, like, hey, we're not going to train you because what's the point? You're leaving in September. So I felt like that was basically how the experience went. That they didn't mind paying me and having me come in and do some routine work. But there was like any hopes, any dreams of, you know, investing in me, teaching me something, or like fighting, you know, for me. It was like, it's a defeating battle. It's like, they already lost because they know I'm going to leave. So what is the point? I feel like, and if I went back and I worked at the same place this summer, it'd be the same context. Like, maybe we could get a thing going where it's like every summer I come in and I work for 4 months and like that's the routine. But I mean, I don't know what kind of company would want that. Like, I don't know if that goes into like any mission statements or if that is like some kind of goal a company wants to do. I don't know like how that would fit in with their aspirations or with mine, really. I mean, I don't want to just go to work and be told like, oh, you're not really an employee here. We're going to keep you that way. It's like, well, it's not the most fulfilling type of workplace, I find, when they basically assume that you're not worth a lot of attention. It wasn't like that. They were very nice people. I did not feel like they singled me out or treated me in any kind of like disrespectful way. But so I don't want to paint them in a bad light. It was a good company. But I don't know if I'm going to go back to that place again. I don't know if I want to do this kind of system again. I might want to I mean, I'm thinking, you know, instead I could stay in Waterloo for the summer and I could get a job for the winter semester that leads into the summer semester. So then there's more reason to train me and to feel like, I mean, this is a stable job because I can work in it throughout the year. So that's sounds like the better plan for me because that's kind of the only way I'm really gonna get. I feel like I'm gonna, that's the only way I'm gonna get a job, an employment. So if they know that I'm gonna stay for a while. So now the question is, I mean, if I'm gonna get a job for, I mean, I'm thinking about getting a long-term job, like I should probably, I mean, I should pick a job that I like, or I should probably do something that, I mean, I look forward to going for the next 4 years, maybe. And I mean, it's also, it's gotta be convenient and it's gotta be, I mean, it's gotta have reasonable hours. It's gonna work with my schedule, and I mean, with classes like being in the middle of the day and stuff, and like I need to work, I need to do homework maybe in the afternoons. It might be better to have it just as a weekend job for now, and then pick it up in the summer. You know, do more hours in the summer, stuff like that, but. So there's just got to be a, I mean, it's a little bit of planning and all. So where am I gonna work? I know that like I'm on the radio, so I'm like a radio guy, but that I don't know if that's gonna be the answer to my problems here, because I don't know if I could work. I'm still thinking about doing that full time or finding a place outside of Radio Laurier to work. Especially in radio. But this kind of got me thinking a bit about, you know, why am I on radio, right? If not to make money. And that's a good motivation. I mean, I would, I'm hoping to take this, you know, one day and make it into a career or make it into something more than just, I don't know, make it into something. I think I could. I want to make this into something at some point. Expand. Maybe that brings income. I don't know. But that, I mean, you could say that's like a dream. So where did the dream come from? Why did I even get into radio? And that is certainly worth to talk about. I mean, I have to pay my, I mean, I have to acknowledge the reason why I'm here and everything like that. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's moved me to getting this position and it's moving me towards maybe picking a career, maybe making expanding this, maybe making this a core, a central point to my life. So, I mean, where did that come from? Where is that inspiration? That aspiration, my truest, deepest motivation. I nod to Opie Hughes and Anthony Cumia as the reason for my revelations. The Opie and Anthony Show was a high-profile radio show that ran from 1995 until 2014. The Opie and Anthony Show. That's my reason. So this show, it was a show about shock jocks. Anthony, Opie and Anthony were like comedians, except their act wasn't in front of a live audience. They recorded live from New York City in a studio, and they were shock jocks. It's not a term that's like well known these days, and nor do I think it ever was, but maybe in New York, the most famous shock jock is Howard Stern. He kind of created people like, you know, like to say he created the genre. It might have been. He was certainly a pioneer, and he's certainly a radio classic. And he must have got, I mean, the inspiration from that, I'm sure he has, he has some stories, but it's well understood that Howard Stern is kind of the face of shock jocks. So Opie and Anthony were exactly that. So what is shock jock? I mean, it's a genre of humor, and it's tied to radio and radio personalities. Eminem has the lyrics in his song Rap God, mentioning that he mixed shock jock with rap. And I think this explains the genre very well. That is Eminem's style, basically. So think of Opie and Anthony like you would picture Eminem's way of life. They're satirists. They're not afraid of ruffling feathers. They're vulgar. And, I mean, but they're also enjoyable. It's very entertaining for your typical rebel or your typical skeptic or anyone who has, well, who has, feelings. I mean, I'm like the kind of crowd Eminem kind of directs his attention to. I mean, it's kind of dark, it's kind of edgy. But I mean, it's also very enjoyable and it's clever and cunning. So that's basically the shock jock. It's a social commentary, it's a political satirist, and also, I mean, they can be goofy and clownish sometimes. And that was the Opie and Anthony show. It was actually, it's like a 3 hour, almost 4 hour airing that happened every day, where Opie and Anthony, the hosts, would, I mean, accompanied by Jim Norton, who was a third mic, who became part of the show in 2001 and carried on with them up until the end. So the three of them would have, they had a lot of comedians, New York-based stand-up comedians come in, and they would spend hours just jazzing, just hanging out and talking about things. Commentating and talking about each other's personal lives sometimes. And they really lived this show. Like, that was their life. It was connected with everything. I mean, they did it every day for, almost 20 years. 4 hours or whatever. I mean, they just spent a lot of time on this thing. And it was. It had a big impact. I mean, it had a lot of followers, and I basically came across it by because of this. One of the guests they had on the show, a regular guest, was the professional stand-up comedian Patrice O'Neill, and his style of humor clicked really well with Opie and Anthony. He was exactly that shock jock type of personality, somebody who wasn't afraid to offend people, but also did it for a reason. And that was Patrice O'Neill's, that's what kind of distinguished him from, I think, most of the stand-up comedians, most of that I've seen, is that not only was he funny, but I mean, and he was funny, really. He could talk about anything. He could always pick an angle that's just ridiculous, but his commentary was, I mean, also it was smart, it was well thought of, and it was reasonable. And I mean, he would go on to say many times on the show that what he did, I mean, it was comedy, it was philosophy as well. But he wasn't. He. And this genre, this style of humor that he had, clicked really well with the Opie and Anthony show, and many of the other guests they had on the show also kind of reflected this genre. So I grew very interested, I grew very attached to the show. I would listen to it often. It was I mean, I felt like it expanded my mind and made me think about things in ways that I've never seen before, and it made me laugh a lot. There was a time, this was my favorite show, so, and it is radio and everything like that, so it's so I was listening to the reruns, of course, and I would spend time doing that. Instead of, instead of doing other things like watching movies, or this was just like my main form of media, and I really liked it. I thought radio was a great place. I mean, look what radio can do. So, that's kind of what brought me here. That's why I'm a radio guy. I admit though, I don't, I mean, that's, they kind of piqued my interest in this field. They kind of showed me a side of radio that I had not seen before, that most people don't talk about anymore. And that's, I mean, it moved me and everything. But I admit, like, but I mean, I'm not, I don't have to make a show. I'm not just here because of the Opie and Anthony show. So I'm not here to somehow feel like I'm, to be like them, or to have a show exactly like that, or kind of, I mean, I want to recreate, I want to, I mean, I'm inspired by it, but I can completely understand that show, I mean, it's not, it doesn't have to be every show, not every show has to be like that. There are plenty of other good shows. And there are plenty, there's different styles that I can take with my show. I can do what I want with my show. And I have many other inspirations as well. So it's not just Opie and Anthony, right? But kind of giving them the well-deserved nod and paying homage, a token, of appreciation, that I do feel like it is rightful to do. Because of how their career on radio has affected my life. So I nod and I pay my respects, highest respects, to the Opie and Anthony show. And by doing that, I can kind of feel like this, I've been released a bit from them. I feel like I can move on from the Opie and Anthony show and kind of make this my own thing. The ideal is not to be Opie and Anthony. It never, it's to acknowledge them. It's to kind of work off what they did somehow. Anyways. We don't have to. That's that. That's the Opie and Anthony show. There's a lot of. There's, I mean, there's a lot of, there's a lot of things about that show that are amazing. So, while the Opie and Anthony show was a fantastic kind of conversation style type of show. You would listen to them bringing in guests, usually stand-up comedians, and just chat it up for a few hours. They never had that much time for music. They had a bit of a they kind of shedded that part of themselves as they grew their show, and they spent more time talking than they did playing. But we're not the Opie and Anthony show. This is another type of show. This show kind of incorporates a bit of music from left and from the right, where it can squeeze it in. This show will play you, will play some rock. Well, they will play something inspiring. So up next, I want to play a song that I think fits well with this. Fit well this week. It's not a song. It's a classic. It comes from a classic album, and it's well done. So please enjoy "Keep on Growing" by Derek and the Dominoes. Derek and the Dominoes. They had one classic album, just the one. Best known for their song "Layla," which I haven't played, so that could be one to share with you guys. "Layla," one of my favorite songs of all time, top 10 songs of all time, and I would argue one of the top 10, the best rock song. That's what I would say about it. Better than "Stairway to Heaven," better than "Free Bird," better than "Bohemian Rhapsody." This is, to me, this is what I think the best rock song is. "Layla" by Derek and the Dominoes, which is, in case Derek and the Dominoes really doesn't sound like anybody you know, you're like, I mean, come on, the best rock song? Who's Derek and the Dominoes? Like, no, what? It's Eric Clapton. So he was the guy, this was one of his bands, because he was in a few. But the story goes that, I mean, the song, the band is supposed to be called, this band is supposed to be Eric and the Dominoes. Or it must have been something like that. And then, yeah, Eric and the Dominoes. And when they went out to perform on their first night, the host clearly couldn't read, and so assumed it was Derek and the Dominoes. And they just kind of went with it. So I think it sounds better that way for some reason. Maybe it's just because I think it works better. I think it just rolls off the tongue better. It's one of those things, like literary devices and all that jazz. So they kind of stuck with it. And I think it's good. But yeah, Eric Clapton, one of the best guitarists of all time. Yeah, of all time. I mean, he's worked on it a lot. So why not? Why not give him that title? He does a lot of guitar stuff. So he's one of the experts. And he does this song "Layla," and it is just the best rock song of the genre of rock. Just the best song. So maybe I'll play that for you guys soon. But this was "Keep on Growing." This was just another forgotten song of that album. But now it's been played for the university. It's made it onto Radio Laurier. I don't know. This could be the first time Derek and the Dominoes, or a song from Derek and the Dominoes other than "Layla," has made it onto this platform. I don't know. Could be. But that's that. As for the rest of you, rest of things, that kind of is it. As I was walking out of class today, and I think up until just recently, it was snowing. So I said to myself, well, at least it's not rain. Because there's just something beautiful about snow. Because it's not disruptive like rain. No one carries an umbrella when it snows. No one gets hit by lightning when it snows. The worst thing that could happen when it snows is your nose, hands, and ears grow still like they froze. I don't like cold. I don't like the snow. But it's not rain, and it's not here forever. This is true. I mean, considering everything that's going on, I mean, tomorrow, the weather might change drastically. If it's anything like last week, we could be looking at days of spring and sweater weather. You know, like September, March style temperature. I don't know. it snows today and tomorrow it'll be easily warmer. That's kind of the pattern that I've been noticing in these past couple weeks. So why would it not continue? If that is what happens, fantastic. If we just get snow and it just keeps snowing from now on and it becomes a regular thing, I mean, is that too early for snow? Or is that normal for snow? How do we judge these things at this point? I mean, I don't remember. All I know is last year and the year before that and the year before that, snow has becoming increasingly, has been showing up increasingly later, usually like mid-December. So maybe this year it's kind of like coming back to what it used to be before I had memory, before I could remember. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see how next year, we'll see how the pattern goes and all that. So, be wary of the weather. Don't trust it. It's not reliable anymore. All right. Have a good week, guys.